I'm Fathery.
This is Dave.
I'm Rachel.
And this is Text Trek.
Engage.
Welcome back on board the Starship Texas for the 278th installment of the Text Trek podcast, the home of Star Trek fandom from deep in the heart of Texas, where you'd think I'd be able to say this right, I say it every Friday, where we take a deep look at Star Trek, old and new, and tonight we are talking about the Star Trek Discovery final season world premiere that they had here in town at Austin, Texas at South by Southwest this week.
Only it... Not everything quite aligned perfectly.
One of us got to go. It wasn't me.
Paramount was nice enough to send us an invite, and then we tried to get Rachel in with the way South by Southwest works at a lot of the venues is if they don't have so many South by Southwest goers fill up the theater, that they'll sell off the extra seats, but. It was packed. There's that much interest in Star Trek Discovery.
It's actually
not that large of a theater, but it was.
No, what I realized it was at the State and not the Paramount. I was like, oh no.
Yeah, it was much less seating.
It was. I mean, very cool that they were able to. I guess I'd say attempt to get us in.
But
maybe next time for all. But Fathery, you were able to make it.
Yeah.
Rachel, you entertained yourself. I know.
So no one that had tried to buy tickets was able to get in, and I had made friends in line. So we got drinks after and talked about Star Trek. So
that's Star Trek convo is still Star Trek.
Yep. Yeah,
and we have a cameo from Thomas the dog.
Yep, the neighbor across the street has a golden retriever puppy that I'm pretty sure they're walking right now. It's around that time.
But I think Thomas was describing how he also was not allowed to attend the screening of the premiere.
No.
That's because he didn't want to drop the $1,400 for a South by badge or whatever it costs.
It's something like that. It's funny because multiple people come to me like, "Oh, you're gonna get a South by badge." People not from Austin who don't realize
is that really the price.
It's something like that for one. South by is priced like an industry event. Is the problem? You could sometimes get into music stuff, but the film part and the interactive part is. Like, priced like an industry event, and most people, I assume their employers are paying for their badges.
That makes sense. By the way, I noticed in the comments, Boat Wreck saying that the first four episodes are floating around because of screeners. There's some spoilers apparently out there. And then he says he's not going to spoil anything. And yeah, let's all be cool about that. Somehow you have managed to see them, or if you've just read about it, this is not... By no means are we going to get even remotely spoilerish in this episode. So help us keep that theme.
We're very vague about what actually happens in like episodes until they're out for everyone.
But we've all three have seen the first episode, so we'll have some reactions on that in a moment. I just want to give a big thank you and shout out to the Patreon supporters who make the weekly live show possible. Before we delve into this. So that's going to be a big thank you to Starfleet Sohel, Cake is Eternal, Crazy Dutchie, Joanne Robertson, John Daw, Geek Filter, Old Grey Trekkie, Quark Spar, Stephanie Durantas, Matthew Averett, Braxton, Chuck A., Joel Valisok, and our anonymous supporters. We're going to have a Patreon watch party tomorrow. If you're listening to this live on Friday, it's going to be tomorrow, March 16th. In celebration of St. Paddy's Day weekend, we'll be watching the Irish episode of TNG Up the Long Ladder.
It's going to be so fun.
Yeah, those are always fun.
I guess the real question is, how do you choose between that and Fairhaven?
Because, well, we've done a lot of Voyager episodes lately, so that's how I decided. That was the tiebreaker, I guess.
You see me lobbying for Arena. Not Arena, Shore Leave, so I could, of course, get my Finnegan fix.
I forgot about that.
Mm. Yeah, I just watched that last weekend, but Finnegan 47 in the Text Trek Discord is a big fan of that episode.
I wonder why.
But if you want to participate in the watch parties, join the Text Trek Patreon. You can come in at whatever tier you're able to help out at, but as little as $2 a month will get you into the watch parties. And there's some other perks if you can afford to be more generous. Yeah, we'll have that going on. And then I've been watching just on and off, like at night. Sometimes I'll toss on some Discovery episodes. I'm reworking my way through the entire series from season one. So I'm like halfway through season one now. So if you're in the Text Trek Discord, I might be posting in there that I'm watching Disco if anyone wants to watch with me. But not really much news other than the Starfleet Academy stuff that Alex Kurtzman talked about at South By. So we'll mention that later. And just to remind people that we are doing our Road to the Final Season of Discovery series of podcasts this week, talking about the premiere of episode 501. But next week, we'll be recapping our favorite moments of Discovery. Then the week after that, we'll list the top three things we want to see in season five and one thing we don't. And then the week after that, 3 weeks from now, April 5th, First Contact Day, we'll be talking about two of the 10 episodes.
It's one on, fifth. Yeah.
Or yeah, is that right? Yeah, 20% of season five. The final season will be in our laps. We'll be discussing it. So
by the way, Father, when we do our favorite moments, that's the broad span of the whole series, right? Not just the previous season or something.
Right. So anything from when the camera pulled out of Takuvma's eye to Stacey Abrams is all fair game.
You know what was a random, it's completely random, a bit that I saw when I was rewatching season four that I was like, damn, that was pretty cool. You know when that Starfleet officer gets killed by Giovanni from the Kawat Malat?
Yeah.
It's what gets her in so much heat.
The guy in the opening in the
The Kawat Malat like started attacking, that dude just sprung into action like it was the fight of his life.
Yeah, I talked about really liking that, like how good of a stuntman he was.
Oh my god.
But I also complained about how, like, why does this 32nd century ship look like 23rd century disco interiors? So it was like Starfleet was probably pulling a bunch of ships out of mothballs. I did the no prize thing, so don't worry. So I can enjoy the stuntman without having to worry about anything else.
You can use retcon to fix it yourself.
Yeah.
That's right. And maybe they even targeted that ship because it was an older one and probably would have weaker defenses.
Yeah, but I guess without any other big news, there's like just a little bit of podcast news that I should mention. I just changed the podcast hosting, and I don't know. Apparently, there's still like a couple people out there who would actually listen to our show they would download the MP3 file, which used to be a pretty common way of listening to podcasts. But I guess like none of the kids do that anymore, so that option is going away. People won't have those links on. I think it was only like two people who ever used this. So to those two people out there, I do apologize, but you can still listen to the show. It's still streaming on all the podcast platforms out there. And you know, like they all have like you can download if you're going on a flight or something. You can like download podcasts on Spotify or Apple Podcast or whatever. So it won't really affect anyone. But I will, if it's important to anyone, I will make a archive that has a link to it in the Text Trek Discord server where people can download any episode of the Text Trek podcast. If you want to have the MP3 file, then if you want to have like your own personal, you know, collection in case something happens, in case it all gets scrubbed from the internet or something, you know, I understand that. I know, like, I like to have physical copies of the things that are important to me. So,
oh yeah. I just got a new phone and I was just like, let me just download things just to make sure in case something like doesn't get saved.
Yeah, it's everything feels a little bit more tentative these days. Everything digital or streaming. So
I used to do that in the old days. I would like download a podcast onto my computer and listen to it. I would just save the file to my computer and then like open it in VLC or Windows Media Player or something. So that's just how I like listened to podcasts in 2005.
I feel like everyone who's ever had like a fan fiction they really enjoyed that they took off and they later regretted not downloading it feels this pain.
Yeah. I guess we're all learning some harsh lessons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's our own The Burn. Now we must reconnect.
But I guess there is kind of a cultural thing of I guess like owners want to own everything and we just pay them to like rent it and we never get to like own it. Like we don't get to own our TV shows. We just pay a subscription service so we can watch them or whatever. So I don't want to contribute to that. So
there also is an appeal to having less stuff. Less shit.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a balance.
I get it. Which is why I have fixed downloaded like on my computer. I didn't like print them out to like put next to me.
Yeah, there. So you can just have it still be virtual, but some degree of ownership. I'll do that for the Text Trek listeners. I'll encourage other media owners to do the same thing. Maybe we'll set a positive trend.
There you go.
But no other news. So the Discovery World premiere at South by Southwest. First of all, like, how cool was that for us, just as some local Austin boys and girls, that they brought that to us? They did that here.
It feels like there's always stuff happening in LA and New York. And I was like, oh my God, they remember the middle of the country exists.
Yeah, but most of the Discovery premieres, I guess all of them have been at, I don't think I ever did anything at San Diego. Someone premiered something there, but it was all of Discovery was either LA or New York or virtual during COVID.
Yeah.
I attended the virtual premiere of season 4. That was fun.
The only virtual premiere I got season 2 of Picard. As someone was able to get me in. And then I was like, I have it in. And then they went right back to, that's when they went back to in-person premieres that I couldn't go to.
They want to come to us and eat our tacos. I mean.
By the way, I should announce now that Austin is a terrible city. Do not move here. If you move here, it will be the worst choice you've ever made in your life. It is 130 degrees every day. We are infested with bats. There's nothing to eat but tacos. If you want to eat something other than a taco, you'll starve to death. Please, none of y'all even think about moving here.
I'll let you come visit for a week. We cannot move here. No, there's always the post that goes around every South by. He's like, okay, everyone, make their life hell so they don't want to move here.
Yeah, no, take note, restaurant servers.
There's the problem also
servers.
That people come during South by and they're like, it's always this cool. There's not usually that much stuff going on. There's stuff going on, but it's not usually like South by.
We would like our city to be less overpopulated and gentrified and...
Basically, it's...
And Elon Musk's...
For a very real fact, is the price of living is going up and it's not good.
But it was kind of convenient that they did the Discovery premiere on the first day of the festival, because it was there wasn't as much craziness downtown. So it was actually a fun experience for me. Just I don't know, just like driving from my North Austin condo to downtown Austin to like, I don't know, just like very familiar roads that like just like remembering, just like, I don't know, just like driving, like going down these roads with my mom when I was a little kid. And then I don't know, it just felt like it just felt like cool that like I got to do like a big cool Star Trek thing just like right outside of my front door, you know. Didn't have to go very far.
I used to work on that street, so it was like, oh yeah, I used to like pass by here every day.
They showed the first episode of season 5. For some reason I thought they were going to show 2, because they're dropping 2 on April 4th, but they only showed the first one. It was followed by a Q&A panel. In attendance was Wilson Cruz, Sonequa Martin-Green, Mary Wiseman, Blue Del Barrio?
I think that's right.
Doug Jones, Michelle Paradise, and Alex Kurtzman.
That is quite the rogues gallery of stunning talent.
Yeah, and David Ajala was in Austin. He was doing like some press stuff, but he wasn't there when they actually showed the episode. So I don't know if he was busy with something else.
But too cool. I
had just seen him a few weeks earlier on the Star Trek cruise. So he's still out and active and doing Star Trek-y things. I guess he was busy, or who knows? Or had to leave town maybe. But there were pictures of him doing other things in Austin. They showed the episode in its entirety, and then they did their Q&A. And they didn't reveal too much juicy stuff in the Q&A, but I can talk about that in a moment. I don't know if just y'all also having seen the first episode, if you want to talk about just kind of our general spoiler-free reactions.
Yeah, do you want to hit that? I imagine that's what some people might be interested to hear. We are going to be, I mean, like, just incredibly circumspect about this, I think.
Welcome to us being really vague about Star
Trek. But I still have a lot of thoughts. I still have a lot of things to say. I mean, it was also the first time I had seen Discovery in that great of a presentation. So I had seen Discovery on the big screen before on the Star Trek cruise a couple years ago. They showed an episode in the theater there. But, you know, a lot of times when they're premiering things at like a convention or something like that, the audio and sound quality might not be top notch. So I am glad that I saw this at a film festival. Because Discovery is just such like a production value wise is just so well made. It looks and sounds great. The footage they shoot with the same 4K cameras, those Arri Alexa cameras that Strange New Worlds use. And I've never seen it in theater resolution blown up on that big of a screen, but it looked so movie-like. I was like, wow, Sonequa Martin-Green as Michael Burnham. I've stared at so many images of you over all these multiple seasons of Star Trek Discovery, and I have never seen your face come through as crisp as it is now. So that, and there, in the action, there's some action-y moments in that episode. Just like the sound design was so good and like the theater speakers. So
Father, let me trigger off of that. Last week when we were talking about season four and I was kind of talking about how I always have to struggle a little bit to wrap my head around this being less like some of the other Trek shows over the decades and more adventuresome like the Kelvin movies or even, you know, I would compare it to just kind of sometimes a sci-fi influenced Pirates of the Caribbean or Raiders of the Lost Ark. And in particular, this season, which was billed as, and this is not a spoiler because it's part of the very concept of it, kind of a treasure hunt or like kind of that there's an object with lots of parties after it. And I was kind of glad I sort of was doing that mental prep in watching some of season four, because I think that really came through in the first episode. They were true to the promise of that. And I was able to really have some fun with it, I think. I enjoyed, to some degree, tropes. Like, when you see that, sometimes you kind of want to see, it's not that they don't do their own thing, but you kind of want to see a little Indiana Jones, frankly. And I felt like they brought a little Indiana Jones in their way, in some big ways. But how about you, Rachel? Did you enjoy the experience?
Yeah, I agree. It was a really fun episode. I know what you mean with tropes, and sometimes I feel like tropes get a bad rap, but there's nothing more delightful, even there's watching or reading, when you it's like a trope you enjoy, you realize it's about to be done really well, you're like, oh yeah, let's go. Like,
yeah, and it's not like
when you see they're avoiding a trope that you really don't like.
Oh yeah, that's true too.
Which like, this episode did for me with something, but I'll let y'all finish before I say what that is.
Yeah, go ahead and finish your thoughts, Rich.
Oh no, it's just a lot of fun, and and Discovery, like, it looks so good. I obviously didn't get to see it on the screen, but still, I've always reminded, my brother works in film production, and at one point, he like was doing an interview with something to do with Discovery, and he saw clips of it, and he was like, oh my god, this is one of the shows, this looks like a movie, and I was like, yeah. I was like, Discovery looks amazing.
I tend to forget that until I revisit a season or, you know, there's a new one starting up. I don't rewatch him as often as Father does. So when I see it, I'm like, oh my god. Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
I think I sometimes take for granted how good the current Star Trek looks.
Yeah.
And I'm like not thinking about it. So, you know, I love all the older stuff, but there's definitely an upgraded production value.
Sure, TOS and TNG in particular, yeah. I think.
But they were good for their time. Like,
though, yeah, they were
no other 60s network sci-fi show looks as good as TOS. No other 80s, 90s network sci-fi show look as good as Berman or Star Trek.
But it was funny, for my brother who was more familiar with TOS and TNG, seeing a clip of Discovery, to went, this is a Star Trek TV show?
Yeah,
it's the 21st century now. We got some good effects. What I was hinting at a second ago about like avoiding a trope, that I think a lot of people will be excited about this, but you know, one of the big complaints that Discovery has gotten a lot over the years is talk about the mystery box and have these big mystery reveals and being either let down or some people just flat out outraged by some of these reveals. And, you know, I was a little nervous myself when they first started showing trailers for season five with an actual mystery box being unlocked. But I think that it's fair to say, after seeing the first episode, that I'm under the impression we're not getting a long, drawn out mystery. The first episode explained a lot up front about what's going on with the main larger arc of the season, and I'm very excited to see what happens next, but it's not like I'm like dying to be like, oh, explain this to me, I'm dying for explanations, I'm dying for answers. It's like, no, I'm dying to see what happens next.
Yeah,
but that which is where I want to be after I see the first episode.
To some degree, I wish they had been a little more aware of that a few seasons earlier. but yes, although I expect there are still all kinds of interesting twists and turns and things to happen. Yes, there's. I was surprised that there's some notable reveals in that first episode. Very pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
And I think y'all would probably agree with me that they've talked about wanting to do this more in season 5, but just from the first episode, it's apparent that they're having a lot of fun using the larger Star Trek universe in both some like big ways and some like small little subtle ways thrown in there. And it doesn't feel like fan servicey, just like Easter eggs packed in there for no reason. No. It felt like a good balance.
It felt like it all just makes sense for existing in the same universe to me so far.
Right. Like when you're playing in that playground, sometimes you're going to use things that are pretty well known, really fan favorite elements. And sometimes you're going to draw on something that's just like, oh, here's a planet or an alien race or a device or something like that. That's just like, that is, that's like under the radar. I'm trying to think of something in season 4. They did a number of things like that in season 4. Oh, well, just random. What's his name? Tarka. He was from Risa. That's, that wasn't fan service. It was within the world, and it showed how a guy like him, who's this kind of really egocentric scientific genius, was, he's on the pleasure planet, and he felt like the odd man out and was annoyed by everybody there. So, yeah, they've gotten pretty good at that balance, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a fun use of a Risian, wasn't it? Yeah, there's some stuff like that, and I'm excited to see even more in season 5. I think we'll get some pretty cool callbacks. I don't know if y'all saw my experience walking out, but I posted about it on TikTok and Instagram and a YouTube short. If people want to follow me on those at TX Trek, but I came out of the theater after seeing the premiere of this and seeing the Q&A panel that I can discuss in a second, but and seeing like those actors and the showrunners, and just and that was when it hit me. It was like, it's really coming to an end, isn't it? And I thought I was already at peace with that. When they announced it was being canceled, I was like, 5 seasons is a good run, and they're doing this Academy show and other things, and I'm sad to see it go, but I'm happy with what we got. And but like now it's like, oh, this is actually going to be sadder than I thought, saying goodbye to these characters. It's going to be rough.
I feel like every time acceptance for a TV show ending, I'm like, yes, I've accepted it, and then I feel like it's the final season starts, and I'm like, oh no, I have it, and then I think I have, and then I watch the final episode, and I'm like, oh no, like.
Yeah, I really wonder how they're going to structure that. And, there were the particular pressures of this one. We know that they didn't know, or in any case, couldn't have known for certain that it would be the final season. And they did some reshoots afterwards.
I was going to save this for later when we talk about the additional interviews that they were doing with the press here during South By. But I should point out now that I thought this was so cool. Michelle Paradise said in an interview with someone, I think Trek Movie, that they didn't feel like they needed to add a ton more to make season 5 feel like an ending. They looked at like the entire season and they were like, wow, we had a lot of things in here that actually work really great for a last season. Let's just change some things in the last episode to tie it all together. And I think we got like a pretty good, final season. And there's stuff I saw in the first episode, right?
I know what you're talking about, and I wish we could, of course, like be not as vague as we're going to be.
But we can spill the beans in 3 weeks, so.
Yeah.
People just have to be a little patient. But I agree with you, Father. I can see why they had that sentiment, because there's something that's an element of it that, I wouldn't have expected in, Treasure Hunt season. I wouldn't have expected might end up providing a structure that could be, that'd be a fulfilling last hurrah and, feel Star Trek-y in a properly big way. And I think at least, only one episode in, but I feel like they have that possibility, and I can see how that could... Without too many changes, it could be a pretty good final season.
Yeah, and it's nice to like hear that I was like, oh, I'm glad that they didn't have to like change all the stuff that they wanted to do because things were wrapping up.
Yeah, and as Dave pointed out, I think either last week or the week before, he mentioned on the show that in a way, it's kind of advantageous if they didn't know it was their final season, because that wasn't hanging over their head about every single creative decision they were making, like, well, this is going to be for like the last season. It's, sometimes that might push you into making the wrong decision for the story.
Yeah, there's so many different ways shows wrap up. Some shows drag on too long, and by the end, it's almost like a mercy killing or something like that. And then, some shows just disappear. They get canceled.
I'm glad they were able to go and do the reshoots for one, like wrap stuff up, but also so it's not like the actors seem to be very close. And so I'm glad it wasn't just like, it turns out that was our last day of work and we're never going to work together again.
Right. Yeah. It's
yeah.
Nice
they got to go back to work for a little bit and say goodbye.
Yeah. So. They get to, the family gets to meet again.
I hadn't thought of that, but that actually is really awesome. I bet that did soften the blow tremendously,
I've heard
actually.
So many actors say it was like, we just found out in the newspaper that we were canceled, and then I never worked with those people again. Like, we're never like all in one room together again.
I think Wilson Cruz posting, you know, he was there, right, Fathery?
Yes. Yeah. He was there.
And he's been posting pictures and stuff like that. And really speaking effusively about working with Sonequa Martin-Green and, you know, and reminding me of that family-type connection that sometimes Trek crews have, you know, fairly mm-hmm. often that the actors who portray them do. And so I was like, yeah, that you're right, Rachel. That is great that they sort of were able to do that. It seems like they seem like a group that will keep in touch.
Yeah.
But I think there's something to be said for a proper goodbye.
Trek actors more than any other, I think, because of conventions. I'm sure they'll see each other a couple of times a year, which is great. I'm glad they'll have that connection.
Yeah, and you know, speaking of that, just watching them hang out at the Q&A panel, that was a lot of fun. Just seeing them clown around together on stage, you could tell that they really like just being in each other's company and just being friends and hanging out. Especially Mary Wiseman and Sonequa Martin-Green and Wilson Cruz and Blue were really the cut-ups. But just to segue into that, the Q&A panel and seeing these people together, I'll talk about that. But I want to comment on Boat Wreck in the live audience, who is thanking me for being the first person to chat with him about Discovery 7 years ago. And was it 7 years or 8 years ago? I guess it was, 2017. But I was on Boat Wreck's YouTube channel in 2017 talking about Disco, and he's commenting on some of our other regulars like Jill and Joel have been in the audience for years. So the Discovery did, you know, not only did it bring like those actors together and made a lot of friendships and connections there, but it brought a lot of us. Dave and I don't know if we would know Rachel if they didn't start Star Trek again. You know, who knows?
If we passing ships in the night, we'd both be in this city and not be aware of each other.
We're in sort of some geeky similar circles, gaming and Star Trek and stuff like that. But yeah, I would probably not know.
I mean, like, we like all live in Austin. You live way more north than I do.
Right. I think of you as living way more south than I do.
Yeah. To be fair, I live in Austin city limits.
That's true. I am technically in Round Rock. I am an exile from Austin. Yeah.
You're a Reman on Remus, and we're in Romulus proper.
I'm gonna start lensing it that way. I like that.
You have to be this Nosferatu creature who lives in the shadows. But the Q&A panel, they didn't give a lot of detailed substance about season 5, but they did talk a little bit about episode 501 that we can't share just yet, but I'll tell y'all what Michelle Paradise had to say about it when we get to it. I guess just the actual source of what is their quest, what they are hunting for. She talked about how she made that decision of what it is. We can't talk about what it is just yet, but we will in the coming weeks. But they talked a lot about just like memories of working on the show together. And it's so funny, like SMG would talk, or I don't know, who was it? I think it was like Alex Kurtzman who said something about like, you know, like these goofballs, they're more of a family than any other cast I'd ever worked with on any TV show, which I mean, yeah, sure. Like a lot of producers are going to say that all the time, but then he's saying like weird specific things like, you know, like they did all this crazy stuff, like blow darting each other. And I'm like, what does he mean? Like blow darting each other. And then Sonequa Martin-Green started like mockingly or like, what would you call that? Like miming, like she was like holding like an invisible blow dart, and she was just like going like she was blowing into it, just like people listening to this won't be able to tell what I'm doing, but just like and like she was like aiming a blow dart at these people, and like she like aimed it at like Doug Jones, and he fainted or put his hand over his head, and like she like aimed it at like Mary Wiseman, and she got like real like I don't know like stumbly and then like collapsed, and they started doing like all like these real actory, you know, reactions. It's just like they all just went into like actor mode and just casually did this like real animated performance.
That's definitely sounds fun. Like stories you hear from like the TNG set.
Yeah, that's what it made me think of when mm-hmm. Kurtzman was like, no other show has ever been as much of a family as these guys. Like, you know, I was kind of like cynical, like, sure, I bet every producer says that about like every TV show. But the more that I thought about it, I was like, but you know, like they do kind of seem like that TNG thing where it's like these people, I don't know if they hang out in real life as much as the TNG people do. I mean, like they're like in each other's weddings and stuff. Yeah. Like they're like that involved with each other.
That's pretty real. That's pretty real. Yeah.
So I don't know. I think these people might not be that close. They probably don't all live in that same proximity. You know, they're probably like not all in LA like the TNG people were.
I wonder if there's something, especially because they were the first Star Trek show that was doing this, where they were like, would go to Canada and film. And so maybe right. were like away from like their normal friends and family. And I would imagine that would get you very close.
Oh, yeah. Especially like during COVID when they, I mean, because they couldn't like go out and socialize with other people. Mm-hmm. So they were just like playing Dungeons and Dragons together and stuff like that. Like who was it? Was it Anthony Rapp ran the game? Or it was, I know the Andorian dude, Mary Wiseman's husband. Noah ran the, he was running the D&D.
That's so cool. And yeah, you know, there's definitely a particular thing to, you know, getting through something as traumatic as the pandemic together. You know, at my, where I work, you know, we had to push through that as a brick and mortar store. And yeah, it does tighten bonds. You have literally gone through trauma together. So I'm sure that did something. Mm-hmm.
And Kurtzman also said that Discovery should be thanked for this modern Star Trek era. He said if they hadn't have, you know, made Discovery work, that we would not have all these other shows. And he said Discovery would not have gone 5 seasons without the fan base. And he said that it is his belief that Star Trek truly belongs to Gene Roddenberry and the fans. And I think like the legal department at Paramount would probably be like, that's not exactly how it works. Yeah, but that was the right sentiment to have, though.
Yeah, that's great.
They're like, as long as we still have that trademark. Like,
you know, crediting Discovery with the you know, everything that kind of came afterwards is a cool thing to say. And, you know, even when I have my ups and downs with Discovery, yeah, I'm like, thinking about its importance and that it paved the way for Strange New Worlds and Picard and everything else, Lower Decks, Prodigy.
They literally wouldn't exist without Discovery, especially Strange New Worlds. Yeah. Like,
I mean, also the other Star franchise wouldn't exist without Star Trek, but a lot of stuff wouldn't.
Yeah,
I just had to point that out because it came up in a recent conversation I had the other day.
And the iPad would probably not be called the iPad if it wasn't for Star Trek.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's pretty cool.
But I guess like another thing that they did, like I think they might have even mentioned this was like during COVID when morale was kind of low. But Sonequa Martin-Green said when they needed the kind of like an energy boost on set, they would do 16 claps. And I'm, you know, people are thinking like, what is that? And they didn't turn over questions to anyone in the press or the audience or anything. They had a moderator like ask all these questions. That's why there's not too much of a substance in here, I think. But there's some fun tidbits. But and Sonequa Martin-Green like turned to the moderator and like actually apologized. Like, sorry, I know you had like your whole bit planned. I'm coming in here and messing it up. But she was just like, hey, everyone, listen to this and respond by clapping. And she just said, everybody, clap your hands. And then people did the, I'm not going to do it, but the.
The cha-cha slide clap?
Yeah, and actually, if you count it, it's actually like 16 claps, I guess.
Okay.
But that makes sense.
That was something they were doing like during COVID and stuff. And also like Wilson Cruz said they had like a little trophy for like the best person that day. And if you were like, it could be like any actor or anyone in the crew. And then if you were given that trophy, then the next day it was your job to find someone doing a great job and give them the trophy.
That is very sweet.
Adorable.
That is just incredibly like, sweet, yeah. So,
I was like, are they a family or a kindergarten classroom? In a very cute way.
But yeah, they talked a lot about like I guess feeling that family vibe. Blue Del Barrio also talked about their experience coming out as a trans person. Mm-hmm. That was something that they did as a character on Discovery when Adira tells Stamets, actually I use they pronouns, but it was also something that Blue was going through in real life at that time. That was around the time they told their family that they were transitioning. And actually the reason why they kept that a little later than her like introduction, they kind of introduce her presenting as a girl and then later reveal that. But the reason why they kind of delayed that was at the request of Blue, who was, you know, in the process of telling people about their transition. So, but it was cool getting to like hear their experience, just talking about like it was so good being, you know, working on a show like Discovery where they felt like they had like this huge support system around them during that.
I have to imagine that's this, so nice this kind hear. Of thing that could have been really even on a show that was intending to, you know, cast a positive light on this, that could be traumatic and difficult and like anxiety inducing and stuff like that. And it sounds like Trek in a lot of ways was kind of just the right show to kind of have that level of support.
Yeah, and I think that was something that Trek kind of dropped the ball on. And you know, I talk about this on the show a lot, but I remember in the aughts, I remember being kind of embarrassed that Joss Whedon was putting queer couples on his TV shows on UPN and on the same network, you know, Star Trek Enterprise, a franchise that was famous for pushing representation from day one, was not doing that. It just felt like a little embarrassing for Star Trek at the time. And I no longer feel that embarrassment because of Discovery.
Right. I mean, that other Star franchise still has not, like, does not have any single, even, like, serious queer character. Yeah. Everything is sort of off to the side, maybe, or kind of, sort of.
Or something that can be cut out when it comes to China.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So, kudos to Trek. It did take a little longer getting there than we might like. But yeah, they've been...
Please no long road references.
Discovery was pretty serious about having some queer representation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was about it from the Q&A, though. There's not really... It was very short. They rushed us out of there pretty quick. You know, I was just talking to... Dave and Rachel off mic before the show about how real estate is probably at a premium during South by Southwest. You don't get like a ton of time in that venue. They got to kick you out and then, you know, premiere some movie or something. Who knows?
Yeah. No, but there was a premiere happening next door to the Star Trek one, and then there was something like right after the Discovery stuff.
Yeah, there was like that Black Keys movie was going on at the Paramount. We were at like, I don't know what you call, like, there's a Paramount theater in Austin, and then the state side theater is like a little like side theater on the side
like
of
a little
it.
Annex.
It's actually, Dave, it was where you and I attended
the Trek the podcast
the
tour.
Great Generation. What are they called? We should know the name of this other Star Trek podcast. The Greatest Generation, yeah.
Yeah, sort of comedic podcast where they would do episode overviews and with a like a comedian's kind of vibe to the recaps. That's I forgot that actually was that was what that was called, the state.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's a nice theater, not quite as big as the Paramount though. That's
yeah. I was going to say, if it was in the Paramount, I probably could have got in.
Yeah, you can fit a lot of people in there.
Yeah.
That's where they premiered that new Evil Dead movie in there last year. So, I mean, like, nothing cool ever happens in the Paramount Theater in Austin, and no one should move here, is what I should have said.
No one should.
Pretend I said that.
You know, I have, by the way, I've been there, I'd say dozens of times over the decades, because I would go to their, they do the summer movie classics thing, and so even aside from, like, occasionally catching plays or you know, musical presentation there. I've been there a lot to see just classic movies like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly and North by Northwest and a bunch of other cool
stuff. I'm glad they do that, especially now that the Alamo Ritz isn't there.
Right.
Oh, yeah. What happened to that building? I don't know. Probably like boring our audience. But
they turned it into Joe Rogan's shitty comedy club.
Oh, yeah. It's Joe Rogan's comedy club now. Yeah,
oh, no. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. What a loss that is.
It'll be something. Like the Ritz was around for a long time before the Draft House, though. It'll become something else someday.
Yeah.
But yeah, people are probably tired of us talking about local Austin trouble.
You know what? Sohail in the comments says he loves these tangents. Sohail, this one's for you. Thank you, and apologies to everyone.
Well, I was going to talk about the stuff that Alex Kurtzman and Michelle Paradise were saying in other interviews and the details we got on Starfleet Academy. But Sohail wants us to talk about where Joe Rogan has his latest comedy
about
club
an Alamo Draft House location that doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. I saw the Disaster Artist there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of stuff in the Paramount with my mom, and well, not like a lot of stuff, but a couple of things.
That's very cool.
It was, yeah, it was like, I like, I don't know. It was like not the same building, but a building next to it. Like, oh, look, I get to see Sonequa Martin-Green and Doug Jones and Alex Kurtzman in like the same place where I used to like hang out with my mom. It just felt like, I don't know, cool. Like,
that's
all
cute.
That stuff was.
Yeah, yeah, a little, an aura of familial ties going on.
It was more of an emotional experience than I thought I was going to have. But
that stuff can sneak up on you, especially, like you said, in these sort of final season type of settings.
Yeah, I'm going to be sad, dude. I'm thankful for the show. I'm thankful for these characters.
Where am I going to get my Saru fix, huh?
Yeah, I've had a lot of like complaints and a plethora of nitpicks and occasional frustrations with Discovery, but I've come out of every season having a good time, and the last season was my favorite, and I think 5 has the potential to be as good. Dare I hope that season 5 tops season 4? I don't know if I should get my expectations up that high. I'm not gonna do that.
Be
to myself,
cautiously optimistic. That's how I go into everything.
I think it is possible that happens. So cautiously optimistic sounds.
I sometimes end up cautiously pessimistic, but you know,
sometimes it's easier. There's nowhere to go but up.
Well, Sohel is now saying he wants us to get back to the scheduled
what
program.
Unleash,
so
he does set our pacing. So all right, Father.
Okay, so I guess y'all are done talking about Discovery. Y'all are already. I mean, the show ain't even had its last season yet, and y'all are already trying to spore jump onto the Academy and get into the Academy. But there was some Academy talk. We got a little bit of a better idea around the production schedule. You know, it was kind of delayed with the strikes, but Alex Kurtzman talked to Collider. He said that they're going to start shooting in late summer. So I think I said on the show in the last couple of weeks, I think it'll probably start shooting in the summer. So just a reminder, people should keep listening to me. They don't know if they'll have it out in time for next year. It might actually be delayed to 2026. He says, you know, they're expecting 6 to 8 months of production and then 6 to 8 months of post. They don't want to rush the effects. So he seemed like really worried about like it's going to have like some real big effects and stuff in it that they want to make sure they get right. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and I would rather them like not rush something just to have it out.
Yeah, well, you'd think like with kids in the Academy, you'd think like, oh, are they gonna try to like cheap out and do just, you know, low budget classroom stuff? But he's saying like, no, there's gonna be like a lot of like big effects and stuff in
that's,
this.
Yeah, that is good to hear.
It's the expense of the holographic chalkboard, Father. That's like, that's the biggie, you know. Father, last week when we had Captain Pikachu on, I think when we were talking about the Starfleet Academy show, you know, we were mentioning the possibility of like, oh, what if it's somehow some kind of, I don't think they'll do this, but like has some mobile element, or, you know, beyond just like field trips, but like, you know, what if it's on a ship? What if it's, you know, on another planet? What if it's on a star base? You know, I can see how you could get expenses out of that.
Yeah.
Depending on
I do want to have an Academy at Earth, just because we don't have a Star Trek show like set on Earth, other than Picard seasons 1 and 2 did it a lot, but...
I've like always been fascinated with like what is Earth like, the Earth is paradise like thing.
When they showed, we saw Earth in a previous season. Was it season 4 or
three.
Season 3?
Season
and
3. Well, they showed at the end of season 4, I guess.
It was only the kind of exterior stuff, right? We didn't see anything.
No, they go
on the surface.
they go and land and hug the tree.
They hug a tree. Yeah.
Okay.
Make sense, but
that's right. Forgot that. But we haven't exactly seen a lot of Earth, though. And it would...
No.
I think it would be kind of a cool grounding. Or maybe we should be starting to get more cosmopolitan now, and maybe we should start moving away from feeling the need to have Earth capital. But
Star Trek's a show about humanity. I don't mind the humans being the main characters of the Federation.
That's true.
I see, racist. That's right, we got there.
I mean, it's a show made by humans. Like we own it. Like literally no one else has ever watched it as far as we know, so.
Except for the dudes
unless,
from Galaxy
unless
Quest.
There's a plot of Galaxy Quest happening above us right now.
Or I guess
Thermians.
Futurama also had that, except they were watching Ally McBeal instead of Star Trek.
But I did like, you know,
I've never
seen
that episode. What?
In the comic book superhero world, you know, for the longest time, all superheroes were kind of like set. This is a Marvel thing specifically in New York, where they were made originally. And then they kind of broadened that so that there was a little bit more, a broader spectrum of national superheroes and eventually a lot more international superheroes. And I think Star Trek kind of has somewhat followed suit. More aliens over time, less, I don't know, a little bit less anthrocentric. focus on humans. Yeah. And I think those are all healthy, too. But to bring it around again, Father 8, I'd like to see Earth, too. So I'd for sure be down with it if that's where they end up.
Like I frequently say, talking about like all these modern Star Trek shows, you know, if it was the only Star Trek we were getting, I wouldn't want it to be Earth-based. But
yeah,
we have Strange New Worlds, and hopefully, you know, not only another season of Prodigy, but it's still possible that Netflix orders a season 3 of Prodigy. Like, we're mm-hmm. going to get additional Star Trek. So yeah, you want to stick one on Earth, that's fine with me. I know there's going to be field trips and stuff, but... They also confirmed it will only be 10 episodes, so the 10-episode season. The modern Star Treks, I think everyone has had 10-episode seasons other than Discovery seasons 1 through 4. And I don't know, I think Discovery seasons 1 through 4, and arguably, I guess, like Picard season 2, are probably the worst-paced seasons of all the modern shows. I think moving to the 10-episode format will be a better fit for Star Trek, just judging on what the other shows are doing.
You know what's weird? This isn't like a completely genuine sentiment, but I almost wish it had one of those giant-ass seasons of old, you know, 24, 26 episodes, because a school seems like a good setting for the random shit. Like, the weird, yeah. Oh, this is a focus on the side character who, you know, you never saw. Oh, here's a story about, like, a guy who's, like, the part of the janitorial staff.
But, you know,
I want those weird ones.
Strange New Worlds has gotten an incredible amount of variety in only 20 episodes.
It's like, shocking. Like,
Strange New Worlds' entirety is less than season 1 of TNG, or any season of TNG, and I feel like it has more variety than any season of TNG, for example. Or, I'm not picking on TNG, but you say that about, like, Voyager, DS9, sure. Anything.
Like, I think it could be fun to be, like, a focus on a student, like a certain student for, like, an episode of...
That was another thing
the Academy show.
That Kurtzman said about as far as the kids in the show, he was asked by, I think it was... either Collider or Trek Movie. I think it was Trek Movie who asked him this, but would the show follow a class of kids season to season, or would it be like new kids show up every year? And Kurtzman said both those things will be happening, which sounds like an actual school. So yeah, you get like new students. And
that makes sense.
It'd probably be like there's a group of kids and some of them would be seniors, or I don't know if they use that term in Star Trek Academy, but then like they would graduate and move on.
I think they say first year, second year, third year, fourth year, instead of freshman, sophomore, whatever.
It would be kind of fun as if they could kind of give us a little like, it's always a little bit risky to create future slang. Sometimes people don't grok to it. But if they, it would be, they could give us a little bit of school slang. I think that'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, I guess Trek has dabbled in that.
I think they could do it if they stick to like stuff like something like freshman or like military slang like thing.
Yeah, I think you can probably, you know, base it on some real stuff. Or Father, it could be like that Enterprise episode with the people who live in a cave. What was it that they used? Oh, it's shale. It's all shale.
Oh yeah, they're fun slang. But
yeah.
I was also thinking that they had, what is it, Tiburon, the planet that the guy was from in The Way to Eden.
Mm-hmm.
But they had a Tiburonese dude or Tiburonian or whatever they're called in the David Mack book Firewall we just read, who is saying, you know, like we reach to 7 of 9 and stuff.
Yes.
So maybe get like a kid from that planet who has like some hippie terminology.
That'd be so fun.
He's like, we reach, like, brother.
He's the school stoner guy.
Yeah. He's got like the snake leaf that Raffi had in Picard season 1, maybe. But Kurtzman said that there's going to be a variety of different kids attending the Academy for a variety of different reasons. And, you know, some want to be there for different reasons. There's some that maybe, like, don't want to be there, but they're there anyways. And
you know, I if I were in the time, I'd be a bit nervous about being the first group because, you know, like, it's going to be the toughest for them, I suppose. Mm. And it's like, what if you get some vengeful Emerald Chain people or whatever? And, you know, you're the easy targets. But I'm sure they'll have all kinds of ideas about what their motivations are. That's going to be cool.
We should say that they haven't officially confirmed that the show is set in the 32nd century, but everything is indicating that it is. They've talked about it being the Academy reopening after 100 years. And Kurtzman, during one of these interviews, said that one of the big themes of the show will be the previous generation has failed the kids, and now what do they do to try to build the Roddenberry optimistic future?
Genuinely, if it's not at this point, I'll be so confused.
Yeah. I mean, that just that thing right there that, okay, it's going to be about, like, the previous generation has failed. It sounds like it is going to be, yeah, like, it's, like, post-burn, yeah. post, like, people left the Federation and now, like, we're rebuilding it.
By the way, I don't know if I can necessarily say it's a failure to instill Federation values or whatever in them when all their ships exploded and all communication everywhere in the galaxy fell off. I don't know if that's the fault of the parents. I don't know. Maybe.
Well, maybe like the things that happened after that, you know, when people the Federation yeah. started splintering.
People can be quite fallible and you can certainly give in to despair and your worst tendencies.
I feel like it's definitely going to be parallel to like real world events where it's like, I don't blame people for COVID. I blame some people for reactions to COVID, though.
I saw some awful, awful reactions throughout yeah. the whole thing. Yeah. So mm-hmm. yeah, that's a very good analogy.
That's pretty much everything that I got on the Academy show, though. It sounds like there's some casting done, but not finalized. He's saying that they still need to cast the kids, but it sounds like they might have like some teachers that are cast. I guess it is interesting that whenever you ask a Discovery actor, are you going to be in the Academy show? They're always like, I don't know, but I sure would like to. But, you know, it sounds like they seem to think that it's in their time period.
Yeah. So.
Right, right. Nobody says, well, that's not even going to happen because...
Okay, what do we think the chances Mary Wiseman's in it?
I mean, I just assume based on the things they did in season 4.
Yeah.
And nothing that we know about in season 5 contradicts that trajectory they put her on. So I think that, I don't know, likely that she's in it.
I hope it happens.
I think it's likely she's in it in some way. I wouldn't be surprised if she ends up being a main character, but it also
she could be the lead. She might be top of the call sheet. I mean, like Alex yeah. Kurtzman's talked about before, like, oh yeah, there's gonna be more Star Trek shows with a woman lead soon. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what else he was talking about, what he could have been thinking about other than Section 31 or this Academy show. So.
Seems likely.
Like, it feels likely, and then I was like, it also feels likely to me that maybe Mary Wiseman is tired, and like...
Maybe and she was doing, like, Broadway stuff, right?
Yeah, that's probably why she had, like, the reduced role in season 4, because she was doing a play.
You couldn't, like, hop back and forth between Canada and the United States?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. But I think it would be cool, whatever they do with, like, that Academy show, if they... Just assuming it was in, like, the 32nd century, if they kind of just... had occasional cameos of like, oh, yeah. we're gonna have like Jet Reno this week, you know, like just imagine Absolutely. That like Jet Reno it's... with like a room full of young punks.
Yeah, there's so many fun Star Trek personalities you could drop in there. Also, well, he's more chill now, but like I would almost I want season 1 Stamets when he was an asshole.
Season 1 Stamets would be such a terrible teacher.
Oh man, yeah,
yeah,
that's
yeah why, that's... he's so impatient.
He could be a guest lecturer, though, and, yeah.
What's funny is I've made it clear that I've always wanted a Starfleet Academy show for a long mm-hmm. time, but it's funny because I'd always imagined it during, like, after, like, when Picard takes place, or sure. like, right after that, because I'd wanted, I was like, but I remember even thinking, I was like, well, if it's in the future, I'm like, holodecks exist. They could still do cameos.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They can cameo anyone with the holodeck.
There are certain characters that either like wouldn't die or like don't die that like, I guess
like
he was
doctor.
Dead, but maybe not. I don't know. Like,
by the way, the doctor would be a cool one too. If
the doctor would be a cool one.
To have as a hologram or
yeah. I kind of would rather see someone else since he's going to have a big role in Prodigy.
Yeah. Well, I guess I meant more theoretically, not like necessarily literally him, but. That's the kind of thing that I'd like yeah. to see done. But yeah, if he's going to have a big role in Prodigy, sure, it could be anybody. But like, you could have, oh, we're going to have a lecture on the rise of android rights from a holographic reproduction of Data, you know, or yeah. something like that.
You could have Guinan show up. Maybe she still has her bar in LA. If it is on Earth, and like, maybe like Tilly is like having like a stressful day, you know, trying to like teach these kids, and she's like, you know what I need? I need, like, some advice from Guinan. And she just, like, goes down to L.A. and goes to Guinan's bar.
That'd be
that
dope.
That would be so cool.
And it's
cool.
still there. It's still there in the 32nd century.
Yeah, I'm for that.
I'm trying to think of, like, any other character would make sense for them, like, to not die. Like, I guess holograms are, like, the...
Yeah.
Holograms, Elorians.
Yeah. There's, you know, Qs can show
Qs.
Up.
Yeah.
I guess theoretically a Borg might prolong somebody's life. I don't know if that's how that works exactly, like being Borged up could. But yeah, there's lots of like powerful alien beings and there's time travelers. And, you know, like, Scotty got time-traveled. I don't, obviously we've lost the actor, but...
No, he was stuck in the transporter.
Right. That's right.
James Doohan is what you're saying.
Yeah, James
Doohan. They could have someone else in stasis or something. Like, maybe not transporter beam again, but something similar. You know, freeze them in carbonite like the other Star franchise, something like that.
Yeah, it'd be an interesting question of, like, whether people would be okay if, say, you... Say, cast a new actor. Say they wanted to do something with somehow Scotty was there, or even it was a hologram of a young, you know, Scotty. You know, would we be okay with, say, Strange New World Scotty being that guy? Because you could probably do that.
Fun.
Oh, I'd want to have stuff from all previous Star Trek shows. If the Academy show, if it's like the furthest in the future, then it should especially if you're in a classroom, if like. I assume like Starfleet history will be a class at the school. So yeah, that's, you should have, I don't know, maybe not like Jankum Pug, but a lot of these people like Janeway, Picard, Kirk, Pike, like their faces should be like everywhere. They should be like the super famous people.
Father, I don't know if you or Rachel ever had the people came to your school with some version of like some kind of scared straight anti-gang thing or something like that.
I want somebody
from like Rura Pente or like a former Emerald Chain gangbanger to come and like scare the kids. Yeah, I'd like to think that probably Starfleet would be above using kind of like scare tactics. But in a way, it'd be interesting to see if there's like, if you could imagine a better version of kind of that sort of basic idea, that'd be cool. And also, there could be characters that are not necessarily famous, but are affiliated with something notable, like, here's somebody who did relief efforts dealing with the burn, or, you know, here's, you know, just with ties to known 32nd century elements in there.
Yeah.
But I'm also hoping that they expand the horizon and use this as like, oh, we're gonna have like a classroom full of kids, so this kid is gonna come from this corner of the galaxy and we're gonna learn about all of that stuff from them, and this other kid comes from a very different place and we're gonna learn about that, and kind of expand the 32nd century world building
for sure.
And especially like early on in the show when it's kind of establishing itself, I'm going to be really eager to see that type of stuff and whatever they do there.
I think because everyone's been so separated from the bird, it will come off quite naturally when people don't, like when someone's having to explain their culture, because it's like, yeah, they haven't been able to communicate with each other.
Right.
So
right. And that's what they leaned into so much in the season 4 episode, All Is Possible, with Tilly and the cadets. It was like, they that was, I guess, kind of the example of what I was talking about. They're all from different places and they're all having a hard time, you know, connecting and getting to know one another. So, which is like a natural arc right there. There's your season 1 arc.
And I say that as a, like, yeah, it's a trope. I like that trope. Do it. Like,
yeah, that's a satisfying ending. Like, I want to see some kids I root for, and then I want to cheer from them, and then I want to worry, like, oh no, are they really going to pull it off? And then I want to feel victorious when they do.
Exactly. And then when one of them dies, I want Picard to come lecture him hardcore.
Yell at them about the first duty, Jean-Luc.
They just—that's actually what they have. They have that speech somehow recorded. Scream at students.
It's going to the Picard room. They're going to the first duty room.
Yeah.
You
got to
hear it.
There's a podcast I listen to where they just got into a debate about, like, is truth the first duty?
Yeah, it sounded pretty cool, though.
I think it is.
I did once fall asleep. Like, I was watching TNG and I fell asleep and I woke up to that speech because it was so loud.
Yeah, he was acting the hell out of that moment.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite moments in all of Star Trek. I made a YouTube video about that in 2020, before Picard premiered, for that was part of Jesse Gender's playlist of creators talking about their favorite Picard moments. So.
You know, when Patrick Stewart kind of goes angry, he can be pretty intense and a little scary. I always think of the scene where he dresses down Hugh when he was pretending he was Locutus again. And he needed to see if Hugh was really a different kind of Borg. And he's just, like, cruel to him. He's like, oh, yeah, we're going to kill Geordi, too, and stuff like that. And, of course, in, was it, The First Contact, you know.
The line should be drawn Ahab. Here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Firing a Tommy gun.
No
fun. Smashing his little ships.
Yeah.
All that stuff.
His line reading of the no father is, like, top tier. Like.
Oh, yeah.
I loved that. That's funny. I was just talking about that earlier today about I was remembering the third time I saw First Contact in the theater back in December of 1996.
I love that you said the third time.
Yeah, the third time I saw it. I went and saw it, and then I came home and watched the Voyager episode Macrocosm. But I got to see, like, badass Picard, and then I got to see, like, badass Janeway. It was like, man, nice. Star Trek was really badass in December of 1996.
There was a streak running through the 90s of
everything was extreme.
Kicking,
yeah, you know. Extreme!
But it sounds like we've exhausted everything there is to say on the Academy show with the limited knowledge that we have thus far.
I think we did a good job.
I keep theorizing, but I'm not going to go anywhere. Also, don't listen to my theories. I'm never right.
I do have a feeling it's not going to look like whatever things I'm thinking of. I feel like I've got a zillion ideas of what that show could look like, and I suspect it's not going to be too close to any of them. So what I do need to do is kind of somewhat brace myself for it being different. That I don't go into it like, it's not what I was thinking.
Yeah, don't do that to yourself. Yeah. But next week, we will be back to talk about our favorite Discovery moments over the years. So that'll be fun. That'll be a kind of a celebration of not all five seasons, because we haven't seen season five, but of four of the five seasons. So
I'm going to pick something from the first episode of season five.
Well, you won't be able to talk about it then, so that would...
Yeah, just bleep me.
There's a really cool moment. Like, promise me, wait a couple weeks.
There's a couple of cool moments. There's a couple of cool moments.
There are.
That's... Yeah. No, I'll stick to seasons 1 through 4.
I encourage people to think yourself, you know, what are some of your favorite moments, and be ready to take part in the conversation in the chat or comment later, or join the Textrek Discord and talk to us over there and keep the show going over there. But we're going to have to go ahead and wrap up tonight, but come back next week for those favorite Discovery moments. And again, massive thank you to the Textrek Patreon supporters. That makes a huge difference. I was thinking about it a lot lately, and just it is a huge relief to that this content that, you know, we put a lot of time and work into, just knowing that it will pay for itself, the cost will be covered, and we can keep doing this every week. And thanks everyone who is pitching in over there. And if you're unable to help out financially but still want to be supportive, you can subscribe to the YouTube channel or rate us. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You can rate us on both. So if you're listening to this, if you don't mind, take the time to open Apple Podcasts and Spotify and give us that 5-star. It really helps boost us in the algorithms and helps other people find the show. And if you're not already subscribed to the YouTube channel, hit that subscribe button. We're gonna try to hit 1701 subs this year, so let's see. I was going to sing a song if we, you know, we've done that before. We hit a goal and I sang my least favorite song ever, the Enterprise theme song, Faith of the Heart. But I think it was one of our audience members, Jill47, I believe is who it was, suggested a few weeks ago, perhaps I should threaten to sing if we don't get 1701 subs. So if you don't want to hear me sing, hit subscribe.
What is it that, who's the guy who, is it Riley sings on?
Kathleen. I don't want to talk about that song because that's not a real Irish song. That's not like I'm mad about that.
But you know why I brought it up. Time. You know why I brought it up, Father.
Yeah, but there's like 1,000 Irish bar songs that you can sing, like they sing like the fake one from Chicago that's not real.
Save it for our Irish watch along, Father.
Yeah. It is St. Patty's this weekend, so I'm gonna go find my whiskey.
Right, you say, I Rachel? Guess you could always try to sing something from the musical episode.
Oh yeah, I'll sing that entire album if y'all don't hit subscribe. So if you don't want to hear that, maybe if we hit 1701, maybe I'll try to get someone a better singer than me. I'll find a Star Trek person who's a really good singer to sing for us. Otherwise, you're going to be
Where's
stuck
Anthony
with me.
Rapp?
Yeah, I just heard him sing a concert on the Trek cruise. He was like, "Oh, this is so fun! I love getting to sing a concert to a very captive audience who's going to clap no matter what." So,
but he's got the Broadway training, right?
Yeah, he's got some pipes. Yeah, yeah. He can sing.
Yeah, yeah. The man from the original cast of Rent. Yeah, right. I think
Well, you know, I wasn't sure, though, whether he was, like, that was, like, the only thing he did, and then he just kind of moved on, or if he's, like, in, like, other musicals and stuff like that.
He was in If Then, which also with Idina Menzel. It's not Sliding Doors the musical, but it is, like, that is the premise. It's a Sliding Doors story.
Boat Rex says Brent Spiner can sing, so let's see him get it.
Oh, you could sing Blue Skies.
Oh, that'd be cool.
I don't know. I like Anthony Rapp singing more than Brent Spiner's. But...
Or
well, then we'll get him, Fathery, if you're going to be huffy about it.
Issa, oh, what is, how do you pronounce her last name?
Issa Briones.
She sings great, too.
Is about to make her Broadway debut.
She was in Hamilton.
She was on tour on Hamilton. Oh, okay. She was on the tour on Hamilton.
Got it. And no, I don't think Anthony Rapp can rap, unfortunately. Oh, I'm sure he can. He just doesn't.
What answer to now?
Yeah.
I feel like if I asked him, I feel like someone's, enough people have had to have asked him that it annoys him, right? Like,
probably so.
Probably.
I just knowing our Trek fan community, many ways, very good people, but I suspect that question has come up.
Yes.
Hey, Anthony, you have a concert tonight. Are you going to rap?
Yeah.
Anthony rap? Get it?
That's when you get STEM at season one.
Well, I'm going to go tweet at Anthony Rapp and ask him if he raps. And then
at Albino Kid.
Drink my St. Patty's Day whiskey. But I'll be rewatching Star Trek Discovery and looking for my favorite moments to talk about with y'all next week. And until then, as always, live long and prosper, y'all.
Listen to the Text Trek podcast through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or at text-trek.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/text-trek. And follow Fathery on Twitter at TXTrek. Please support us by liking our videos and subscribing to our channel on YouTube. Thank you and take care.